Good afternoon and welcome to Animal Voices, the weekly program that encourages compassion and respect for all living creatures. Animal Voices is a cooperative effort by three local groups, Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection, Earth Save Canada, and the Vancouver Humane Society. Ideas expressed on this program are not necessarily these of those societies. My name is Marge Adams, and in the studio with me are co-host and technician for the day, John Pranger, and co-host Carl Loskin. At the top of today's show, we will be speaking with Anthony Marr, a local animal activist, about the incident that occurred last week involving a captive tiger, which led to the death of a woman and ultimately the killing of the tiger. Later, John Pranger and Carl Loskin will be interviewing Robert McCandles, who is an herbalist, and Inga Hanley, an health activist. And they are going to be talking about the Codex Eliminatorius Commission, which is endeavoring to regulate dietary supplements, including herbal medicine, on a worldwide basis. We are wondering if this commission has the public health in mind or the welfare of the big pharmaceuticals. So we're looking forward to hearing from Anthony Marr very shortly. In the meantime, John?
Pussycats run up there, down the hall and up the stairs. Pussycats run, pussycats hide, pussycats all want to play outside. The pussycats are in the yard. You never see a pussycat working hard. Pussycats sleep all day. Nighttime comes, it's time to play. Pussies so cute when they're really small. Then they get real big and they act too tall. Pussycat, you don't care. Pussycat, sleep in your favorite chair. Pussycat always is looking around. Eyes roll up, eyes roll down. Pussycat whiskers, pussycat hair. Pussycat looks, pussycat stare. What does pussycat have to do but lie on his back and say, who are you? Pussycat people, they don't mind. The pussycat live on pussycat time. Pussycats are in the hall. Pussycat, where's your ball? Pussycat, where'd you go? Did you find the mouse hiding in the hole? Pussycat always is looking around. Eyes roll up, eyes roll down. Pussycat whiskers, pussycat hair. Pussycat looks, pussycat stare. Pussycat, chase your tail. Pussycat girls, pussycat male. Pussycat, what's your name? Pussycat wild, pussycat tame. Pussycat, he's my best friend. Now this is empty, he's gone again. Pussycat, walk on by. Pussycat cool, pussycat sly. Pussycat cool, pussycat sly. Pussycat is cool.
Yes.
Pussycat is sly.
Pussycat is very cool. I know, I have one at home. Now, I just want to give a little bit of background to the incident that Anthony Marr is going to be discussing with us very shortly. And I'm sure most of you have heard about the tiger incident, but in case there are some who haven't, I'll just review it briefly. Last week, just outside 100 Mile House at a zoo called Siberian Magic, a girlfriend of the zoo owner was petting Genghis, who is a Bengal tiger. And the tiger was in his cage, and she was standing outside. Unfortunately, she had a long skirt on, which apparently was attractive to the animal, and he liked to play with it. Well, something happened, and the tiger got a hold of the lady's leg and managed to pull her inside the cage. And an artery in her leg was severed, which unfortunately, again, led to the bleeding of her leg, and she actually died as a result. Now, an effort was made, or has been made over some time, to get another placement for the animal, but there's just nowhere for a tiger to go into a sanctuary. Nothing was available. Everything was filled up. As a result, the effort was discontinued, and a veterinarian was called, and Genghis was euthanized. Now, the whole incident is terribly sad. Two deaths resulted from it, and I just think that we have to kind of look at the exotic importation question, and what is this doing to the world?
Yes, unfortunately, in many parts of Canada, the laws governing animal cruelty and exotic species are so weak that we can't do much about these sorry cases that you just mentioned, Marge. In many provinces, including Ontario and British Columbia, anyone can buy a tiger and open up a roadside zoo. So no law prevents people from breeding and selling jungle cats as pets. It is not necessarily illegal to bash stray cats to death, and that made me think about the little song you just we just had on a few minutes ago. Or what other people could do is keep caimans, and of course caiman is related to alligators, and to guard your grow up. So what we really need is a movement to improve. Also, the shocking conditions in many of the zoos. So legislation should be in place. It's been stalled for many years. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many times it's been rewritten, and it just does not seem to go through.
Well, but I think
maybe this may be the spark that sets off some of our legislators to make action.
That would make it somewhat worthwhile, the death of these two individuals. And now we have Anthony Marr on the line, and I want to tell you a little bit about Anthony, who's a longtime friend of Animal Voices. He is an animal activist who lives in Vancouver, and he has worked on behalf of many species, including tigers. Hi, Anthony. Welcome back. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Marge.
Wonderful. Now, Anthony, I know this incident was very disturbing to a lot of people, and including myself and others who are with me. And I know it must have been very upsetting to you also. Will you please tell us what your reaction is to the event?
Well, first of all, of course, the first thing I learned about it was that somebody was killed, a human person, and of course that is very regrettable. Any time when an animal human interaction ends up with the human death, it is always a tragedy. Well, both ways, of course, but it's always a tragedy for both parties. And then, of course, it proved true a couple of days later when the tiger was announced to have been executed. So. Both are very sad situations, and the both in combination, of course, is magnified quite a few times more.
Yes, and there's just no place for that animal to go, apparently. There are very few sanctuaries, I imagine, for big cats in Canada, let alone in British Columbia.
Well, yeah. In Canada, I can't even name you one by heart. In the U.S., during my numerous long tours through 40-some-odd states, I've visited quite a few tiger sanctuaries and refuges, and it's not really such a pretty picture there either. You know, it's you know, from a tiger's point of view, it is just another zoo, even though the human intention is different. The condition is the same. It's still captivity, and it is very cramped because there are more tigers that need these facilities than there are facilities.
So it's not a good situation either. Now, tell me, what is the tiger population approximately in the wild? Do you know, Anthony?
Well, in the wild, I would I think it's almost anybody's guess between, say, about 3,500, even maybe as low as 3,000, up to about 5,000. I would say anywhere between 3,000 to 5,000.
And they are endangered, aren't they? They're on an endangered list.
They have been since quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
In the 1980s, I believe, 86, I think.
What are the main reasons for this decline?
The main reason?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, let me just go back to the original point, which was, let's say, original point meaning the point of full tiger population in India. It was probably a century ago, more than a century ago, when there was supposed to be 80,000. 80,000, that's 80,000. And then because of habitat destruction, you can imagine due to the huge human growth and then cattle growth, and also because of directly killing them by trophy hunting, legal. By the early 1970s, there were fewer than 2,000 left.
Really?
Of the original 80,000.
Mm.
And then Project Tiger was formed quickly, and 26 tiger reserves were created, and trophy hunting was banned, and the tiger population rebounded a little bit because of this protection. But then in the 1990s, there was a new demand, a new raised, heightened demand for tiger parts medicine when the Asian countries began to be economically affluent. And so it drove a lot of poaching, because hunting is no longer legal. And so the population dipped again. And today the population seems to have stabilized a little bit because of new measures and progress in the movement, but it's still very shaky a situation in the wild.
Yes, and now you have gone at least three times to India, haven't you, in trying to deal with the tiger situation. And
right.
And what were the main problems there? Legislation? Did you think that was not adequate, or what
in India?
Yeah.
Well, India as a whole is not a kind of system that that a Western person would find to be extremely efficient, to put it loosely.
Oh, yeah.
And that is both in terms of the superstructure, infrastructure, or lack thereof, as well as the corruption within the system itself. And so even though there is... Project Tiger is still there. It is not very effective either, and to protect the tiger is never a top issue in India, even though it should be. It should be by far the biggest issue there.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And then the incessant pressure of the humans, namely mostly the rural people that live right around the tiger reserves, where the few, you know, several square hundred square kilometers in each, about 25 of them, and there's huge pressure from all sides on them, so the habitat is shrinking as well, and unless huge efforts are being put forth by the Indian government as well as by the international community to stabilize the habitat loss. The habitat loss is mostly due to sort of human occupation, deforestation, overgrazing, but too many cows there. And so unless all these stop and turn around, things are not very hopeful in the long run still.
And so there isn't enough effort being made right now to assure their preservation, I guess, huh?
By far.
Right, yeah.
All now, over the world, not just in India. India is actually... probably a more organized effort than most.
Right.
Let's say if you go into the Southeast Asian countries, even Thailand, Myanmar, Laos, Cambodia, all these countries, Vietnam, things are far less well-structured there for the Indo-Chinese tiger. That's another subspecies. And then Sumatra in Indonesia, the Sumatran tiger's forest is still being cut down to create land for new coffee plantations for Western consumption.
I see. Now, this would be a reason, I suppose, for importing tigers to foreign countries where they are protected and so forth. Do you think that this is a justifiable reason for bringing animals out of their homeland, for the breeding?
Well, there's basically no animal to available for being brought out of from the homeland because there's not enough of them already. Also, international trade is not allowed once a species is declared endangered, unless there is a very good plan, you know, to between two governments and say, you know, this can be circumvented because we are transferring so many tigers from this country to that country as a breeding stock or whatever. But then in North America, this is that's not a situation. In North America, tiger breeding is all on its own an industry. It has nothing to do with, well, has not nothing to do, but very little to do with conservation.
Yes,
it is just that people, some people tend to want to breed big cats, and certain people want to own them, certain people want to look at them in captivity, and all these put together, there are more captive tigers in North America than in the wild.
Yes, isn't
however,
that amazing?
The majority of these captive tigers are of no conservation value because they're bred very carelessly, and a breeding book is not established for these, what I call cubby male tigers.
And
so you know, nobody knows where they're from. You know, nobody even knows if for sure whether one is a Bengal tiger or one is a Siberian tiger. They're usually a mix of them. And in terms of conservation of these subspecies, they are worthless, unfortunately.
Oh yes, so
but of course they are still noble animals in their own right, and they should be treated as such.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. So that you don't want mixed subspecies because they're hybrids, I guess. Would that be what they'd be called?
Well, hybrids refer to between species, and these are between subspecies of tigers. So they're not exactly hybrids. They're kind of like a mixed breed. Whereas there is something as a tiger lion hybrid. With a male lion, female tiger is the liger, with a male tiger, female lion, it is the tigron.
Oh, I see.
And,
I didn't know they could interbreed.
And these are hybrids, and they're usually infertile.
Yeah, well, we do need a lot of change, a lot of protection for these animals. And one small glimmer of light, Anthony, is the new bylaw in the city of Vancouver, which legislates against the importation of big cats and the keeping of them. Now, and numerous other animals, which we'll talk about at a later date. But this has just happened within the last, I would say, 2 weeks that this bylaw has been put into effect. So that's a little bit of hope. But what we really need is broader legislation, international legislation, I suppose, but we have no federal or provincial legislation at the present time. So maybe as British Columbians, that's what we should be pushing for.
Well, yes, absolutely. But that's what the activist in the U.S. is pushing for. Is federal legislation to protect animals.
I see.
And there is one more thing too about Vancouver, which I sort of tell my American activist friends when I go traveling in the U.S., which I do about half a year every year. And I told them that Vancouver actually has legislation against using animals for entertainment purposes inside the city limits of Vancouver,
yes.
Which of course.
Mm-hmm.
Precludes a circus from coming in using elephants and tigers.
That is certainly, that's been on the books for a while, hasn't it?
And when I told my American friends this, they thought that Vancouver is a hugely advanced and civilized city.
Really? Well,
these are what they are scratching their fingernails off for in their own places and getting nowhere.
Yeah, it's sad, and you can see what results.
We should be proud of ourselves, actually, in these achievements. But of course, it is just one step in the evolution of our civilization.
Yes, yeah. I hope we evolve quickly enough that we don't lose many more species. Okay, I guess we're going to have to cut it off now, Anthony. Thank you very much for speaking with us today.
My pleasure, as usual.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Now, John.
And that was Anthony Meyer, who will be back in a moment with Robert McCandles and Inga Hand.
No. She's never done. Okay. And we're back.
This is.
And with us today is Inga Hanley and Robert McCandles. We're going to be talking about Codex and the new regulations by Health Canada. Within the next 2 years, Canadians' access to natural health products such as herbs, vitamins, and supplements may be severely curtailed because Health Canada is now proposing to implement manufacturers' fees that will result in skyrocketing retail prices. So we're going to talk to Robert McCandles of Gaia Gardens Herbal Dispensary and with Inga Hanley about this and recent developments in the Codex Alimentarius, which is a multinational body that's currently setting dangerous food standards and is actually threatening consumers' access to effective nutrients worldwide. And I'd just like to read a little bit of what is happening with the FDA. And somebody made a... Well, here's what the FDA says in its own docket. If a person decides to produce and sell raw vegetable juice for use in juice therapy to promote optimal health, and if the juice therapy is intended for use as part of a disease treatment regimen instead of for the general wellness, the vegetable juice would also be subject to regulations as a drug under the Act. Inga, what's your view of that kind of draconian nonsense?
Well, doesn't that sum it up beautifully? What they have really done is... they have followed up on something that is a 100-year-old strategy agenda, where they, by definition, have classified disease rather than health as the center focus. And now anything that functions normally in the body as nutrients do to keep you healthy, if you're healthy, you don't have disease. But now if you try to prevent disease, which is health, it is now under definition a pharmaceutical entity. So if you take carrot juice with the intention of staying healthy, which is the intention of reversing or preventing disease, then that is a drug. Now, how stupid and how absolutely insidious can you make regulations? But we have regulations not by common sense. We have regulations by dictum. We have regulations by declaration. We have regulations that have absolutely no connection whatsoever to what science and reality is. In other words, they have an agenda, they make the definitions, then they base laws on the definitions that they have made to serve their purpose, and then if you don't follow those regulations based on fictitious definitions, then you are criminal. And you can be fined, and you can have all kinds of hell and damnation descend upon you. Now, in other words, the government some time ago said that these regulatory agencies, like the FDA, like Health Canada, have to be at arm's length from the government so that we don't have political interference. So instead what they have done is they have infiltrated these agencies with agents of the big pharma and the big corporations, etc. And so you don't need political interference on their behalf because it's already inside. There's a Trojan horse there. Mulroney, when Mulroney came in with NAFTA, he threw out the scientists, fired them, or gave them early retirement, and put in administrators. Health Canada is rotten to the core. And through Health Canada, the government is literally selling your health and your right to health to Big Pharma to own and run the chicken coop.
Are you there, Robert?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, hi. There's someone calling in, but I'm not going to answer that call. Is there now a third category, as was promised by Health Canada, to put nutrients and supplements under a third category? Instead, it has gone under the category of drugs and is now being proposed as a... rather, that regulation is now proposed under that category?
Well, there's a lot of play of words around the whole
thing. Yes, the natural health product was supposed to be a third category. It looks like it is possibly a subcategory in reality.
Of drugs.
Of drugs.
Uh-huh. Which means that they will need all sorts of pre-market conditions set and so on. And I mean, the price of this will be out of this world. And the safety of these drugs or of these herbs and supplements do not have to be proven. Why are they insisting that they now be proven as a subcategory under drugs?
Well, the whole reason why we decided to play the game with the government, in other words, to be have a citizen's input on it, was we didn't want them to screw around with us. We wanted to be part of the process. So we decided, okay, let's see if we can go to Ottawa. We'll be there and sit there every 3 months or so for years and try to hammer out some decent regulations that would actually hopefully provide some safety and some quality and certainly access at reasonable prices to the public. So that was our aim as a small manufacturer, to try to do this. Whether we succeeded or not, we may have totally failed. We may have been, as I said, screwed. Well, but I'm not sure yet. It's very hard to tell.
Well, for those of us who saw the entire agenda develop over decades now,
yes,
it was obvious to the city, to the citizens, that this was just simply a maneuver on their part. And see, once you have connected an herb to a disease, then you have to prove that it can remediate a disease. Well, foods and herbs are not designed to remediate disease, even though they do. They are designed to be building blocks for a healthy body. If you have a healthy body, the disease reverses. And so the whole logic is upside down. But if they now come in with a regulation that says, well, these are now subcategories of drugs, therefore you have to prove that it can remediate a specific disease. Well, that's herbs and nutrients are not disease specific; they are metabolism specific.
Yes,
you could have dandelions in your backyard, and the cops would come and root them out because now you're suddenly dealing in drugs. I mean, I can see that's kind of nonsense happening because you can make therapeutic claims for dandelion root and dandelion leaves.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, it has happened in Australia already, and overnight, over 2,000 natural food outlets closed down overnight, literally.
Oh. And that can happen here because the price of these supplements and herbs are going to steeply rise because of these draconian requirements of pre-market proof of efficacy and safety and all that. Well, you know, we have 2,000 years of experience with European herbs. And the native people here have had clinical experience with the herb. They know what's poisonous and what's not and what these herbs do. So we don't need to prove these things. How do they propose to do these? On huge clinical trials that cost millions of dollars that only drug companies can afford? You know,
well,
it's not an outrage.
The rule was supposed to be that if it was traditionally used for thousands of years, that you would not have to prove anything.
Right.
Other than...
And we trusted them that that was what they were going to maintain.
Yeah, we were naive. But could you give us some idea as to what the actual cost of, what is the assessment per formulation, per product that you are going to have on the shelf? What would it cost, for instance, Gaia Gardens to comply with their new regs?
Well, basically, the fee is $1,800 to apply. For a new product.
And for a new product?
Yes, and
any
there's lots
product.
And lots of paperwork involved with that, of course, so there's enormous amount of staff hours involved with that. So we're looking at several thousand dollars to apply and hopefully get an approval.
Now, a new product wouldn't necessarily mean a new herb. It simply means a new combination, right?
A new combination, yes.
That's ridiculous.
Well, there's paperwork involved, so we... previous to now, the costs have been much less. They've been much smaller than that. And, you know, we've put up with those kinds of fees up till now. But the increased fees, the big one is actually $940 license per year per product. So we're talking a minimum of $500,000 for our company to give to Health Canada for doing basically nothing except keeping information on file.
$500,000 for a little company the size of Gaia?
Yes, that's probably...
This is insane.
Exactly, yes. It is. But we would be out of business very, very quick.
I mean, a big pharma who is eyeing this market, I mean, they have big eyes to get complete control of this market. They have deep products. A couple $1 billion, never mind $1 million, is nothing to them.
That's true.
And so, therefore, they can keep up this game until they simply wipe out the competition. Several years ago, I read a book on strategy, and they pointed out that if they were to come in and make something illegal, people would be up in arms. However, that they could make regulations and fines and production protocols so complicated and so costly that they could eliminate the competition without having to come out and say, we have made this illegal.
Yes.
They simply make it impossible to function.
Right. Well, in fact, most of the smaller manufacturers and health food producers in Canada have been bought by larger companies, most of whom are pharmaceutical companies or pharmaceutical-connected companies.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
And with that, there's something else that's happening, because, Health Canada is actually out-codexing Codex. And by this, I mean they're bringing in Codex regulations long before Codex is mandating it. And then the FDA, as John pointed out, is the same thing is going on down in the States. And then there has to be harmonization in the newer North American Union. So it's a huge agenda and framework here.
Yes, it's international.
International and certainly very insidious just from the North American perspective.
And it's going to knock a lot of practitioners out of the game, too, isn't it? Because it threatens them because of that. If the category now is a subcategory of drugs, only licensed practitioners will be able to administer these herbs about which they know nothing and supplements about which they know nothing.
Well,
the chiropractors and the osteopaths, they may be things of the past.
Well, they're already not funded, so that in that respect, they're already poverty-stricken. But it's rather interesting that if you read Codex, you will find that they would really like to get rid of natural products and replace them with synthetic ones, because on the grounds that they can be standardized chemically to 100% compliance.
Yeah.
Well, drugs may work that way, but herbs, the nutrients in herbs, have a synergistic function.
Yeah.
There is no one active ingredient in any herb.
That's right. There's thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of active ingredients, possibly, that time release and...
Well, interesting.
So
I mean, we had a forum from Health Action Network Society in the 80s. And at that time, Michelin Ho from Health Canada was present. This is when we were fighting the first regulations of this kind. And at that time, they redefined what was a drug. And a drug is any substance that has a physiological function in the body. In the question and answer period, I challenged Dr. Ho and I said, every nutrient has a physiological function in the body, otherwise it wouldn't be a nutrient.
Yes.
So therefore, the only ones that you would say are legally on the market as foods would be the junk food, which are destructive. And when I was present at the so-called citizen input, when they were changing the Health Canada regulations half a year ago or a year, I forget exactly when it was. And when I... No, it wasn't. It was just very recent. And when I read it through, there was something that jumped out at me. And that is that food additives, like aspartame and all the other preservatives, etc., that they add to food, have been categorized as food and therefore do not need to be monitored. But anything that has the least little health potential has to be regulated and controlled and right down to the nth degree. You mustn't have anything that's safe and good for you unless Big Pharma has its big grubby hands in it.
Okay, and you're speaking of the Codex.
No, I'm talking about Health Canada.
Oh, Health Canada.
The new Health Canada complete package. They revised the rules and regulations of Health Canada.
Oh, I see.
And if you read very carefully under food, you'll find that the additives have been classified as food and therefore do not need any surveillance. However, any substance that we claim to be healthy has to be proven to be healthy and proven to be disease-specific.
Well, that includes air and water, of course.
Mm-hmm. Actually, well, as John said, if carrot juice is used for a specific purpose, that is of making you healthy when you aren't, then it becomes a drug. And it's not just Health Canada here. Agriculture Canada is in on this, too, because Agriculture Canada is going for factory farming and total vertical integration of the food production industry from GMOs all the way up to the supermarket shelves.
And Codex will impose that on all of us.
And this is just an example of this absurdity and the fact that neither Agriculture Canada nor Health Canada want to see solutions that are cheap and available to the citizens in a self-preservation and self-sufficiency model. There is a soil bacteria called Bacillus lactarosporus. It was rediscovered up in Iceland by an agronomist who brought it back to California and marketed it. We soon found out that this particular soil bacteria is very aggressive against certain fungal problems. And we found out that if we sprayed this on leaves rather than just water it into the ground, that a lot of our fungal problems in plants disappeared, including blight on potatoes, which I did in my own organic garden. I was actually selling this product. The product was unceremoniously removed from the market, and when I challenged Agriculture Canada, they said it has absolutely nothing to do with the safety of the product, but the way that it is being used. And you are using it to prevent a fungal disease. That, by definition, makes it a fungicide, and it is totally unfair for a natural product to be marketed in competition to the chemical fungicides without requiring the same kind of testing and expense.
I see.
That was the answer that I got.
Right.
So you can see their reasoning.
But what good does that testing do when we have nothing but toxic materials on the marketplace?
What I'm saying is they do not want solutions unless it can be controlled by big pharma and big agriculture and the Monsantos, etc., of the world. They want total control of everything that you need or everything that is essential for your well-being. They want it to go through their coffers. You have become the financial human resource to be milked by big industry. That's the long and the short of it.
Robert,
unfortunately, corporations are given this right. We legally allow corporations to lie, cheat, steal, destroy the environment, kill people. It is a fact of life, especially in the Western world, that we allow corporations to act like this and to get away with it. And it is essentially, it's a greed culture.
First of all, it's a greed culture, right? Unfortunately, we have, in the last 50 years of our educational system, we have imbued our children with this greed culture.
Yes.
And so the ordinary citizen does not revolt against this greed culture, because to have something other than a greed culture is socialism, and that's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, to have social concern, to take care of citizens, or to set up a system whereby citizens can take care of themselves, that is the ultimate travesty as far as corporations are concerned. I think Rockefeller said the ultimate sin is to allow competition.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the thing is that we, the citizens, through our complacency and our apathy and our refusal to become involved in government, except to in an expedient way to get a momentary monetary advantage in one way or another, which they are very good at spinning. We have not become involved in civic affairs and demanded that our politicians operate with principle and that they protect citizens. It is their mandate to protect citizens, the welfare of citizens.
Exactly.
It is not their mandate to be the spokesman and the implementer of big industry.
True.
But they think big industry is the people. Maybe no, they can argue that. You see? They have a strong lobbying voice in on the Hill, and we don't. So therefore, yeah, the politicians will assume, well, you know, these people are looking after our interests.
Health Canada has actually publicly said that the industry is their client.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, Robert, you're a herbalist, isn't that right?
That's right. 25
you know,
years.
You know that a catnip has a different effect on me than it has on my cat.
Yes.
So any pre-marketing test done on cats and rats and dogs is not going to give us any kind of answers. So it may very well, they may conduct studies that have every herb causing cancer. You know, it can be manipulated that way. And that is one way of destroying. Of course, the cost of doing all these things will be the first destroyer of health and alternative health. And a lot of practitioners are going to lose their business, and you're going to lose your business, and we are all going to be without means to maintain our health. And the bankruptor of the public health system is, of course, drugs, which is the cost of which is escalating at a phenomenal degree.
Not only the cost, I think people are not aware of the fact that approximately a 750,000 people in North America die every year because of the toxic effect of drugs. This is just the people that die. Now, if a 750,000 people are killed by toxic drugs, then how many are left ill and maimed?
That's true, too.
And so there are millions of people who are ill and require medical treatment because of the drugs that they are taking that are supposed to be curing them. But concomitant with this, running right alongside this, is this dogged determination to limit the open release of information. They say, oh, the public wouldn't know. The public is very good at getting the information that is for their own welfare. If they would allow the open release of all the information on herbs and vitamins, etc., that has been accumulated over the last 100 years, the public will not intentionally destroy itself. It has a vested interest in its health. They have a industry has a vested interest to keep the public stupid, and they want control of the ability to give the public information. And that runs right alongside this business of regulating the industry, the producers. Put the producers out of the way and then control the information.
Well, almost everyone I know goes on the internet now, even people who don't have computers. They'll go to the library and look up herbs. The public is becoming quite well educated about these things.
Well, in California, there are laws that make it illegal for anyone to put out information that can't be proved, quote, in a drug scenario. So there is a limit to what you can put on, unfortunately.
Well, if you go to the German research, it's pretty darn good. It's pretty clear that these herbs work, and they have worked for thousands of years.
Actually, one of the reasons why the German pharmaceuticals have been in the foreground in Codex is because over a century, they are the ones that have developed a lot of these homeopathics and herbal medicines, and they know that they work, but they want control of them.
If you're a big corporation, that's your mandate, is to make money, period.
It's rather interesting that at the last meeting in the beginning of May this year in Ottawa, and then later on in Oslo, they were arguing about the labeling of GMOs. And it was interesting that the countries that are producing GMOs argued that Codex has no mandate to make sure that the public is informed. The public has no right to know. The industry has every right to deceive and keep the public ignorant.
And they wanted to call it a waste of time and wanted Codex's work on GM labeling to stop immediately. And also, it's been discovered that Monsanto representatives were working closely with some of these grain exporting nations, such as Canada and the United States and, New Zealand, Mexico, Argentina.
Working closely. Whereas they are the government.
The other countries of the world don't want this.
Yes.
But the United States delegate, Dr. Schneemann, whatever her name is, she argued that GM foods were already found safe, and so there was no need to label them genetically modified. And Health Canada is actually taken products off the shelves which claimed this.
Well, in Alice in Wonderland, the Queen of Hearts said, "It is because I say it is."
Yes.
And we have never had a more comprehensive fraud within the scientific community, because now we have science by declaration. Just this last week, there was a program on TV that said that, oh, if you have vitamins, you're going to get a stomach cancer or intestinal cancer. They don't have one iota of proof. However, the public hears that and immediately goes into conniptions. But before we end the program, because I'm not sure what time it is.
It's only 12:45, but
I really think it's very, very important that the citizens that are listening now must realize that it is up to them to get off their backsides and realize that it is their health that is on the line. Because if small manufacturers cannot put products on the market, we, the citizen, do not have those products. We do not have access to them. They're gone. And so we are fighting for survival. It is not just the small producers that are fighting for survival.
Will these claims also, or these regulatory attempts also be imposed on natural products, cosmetics and to toothpaste and, you know, all these other non-toxic household and cosmetic articles that have come out in the last 20 years.
If you make health claims.
With the organics movement and rejecting the poisonous materials coming out of the drug industry and the soap industries and whatnot. So there's been all sorts of alternatives come onto the market which people are using for alternate lifestyle and non-toxic lifestyle. Are those also under threat, do you think?
Absolutely.
As long as there's money to be made, there's going to be somebody who will want to corner it and control it and sell it.
You see, we used to have a Combines Act, and that meant that you could not merger so many companies that there was just one, which is then that's called a monopoly, right?
Yes.
Those provisions were totally removed. Now, any company can buy or take over any other company, and eventually what you'll have is monopolies on the top, all owned by the same people that run the financial, who are the financial bankers of the world. The financiers are the owners of the big corporations, and they will not stop until they own every aspect of your life. Let's not kid ourselves. What I'm saying to the citizens that are listening, please write your MP in no don't leave any doubt as to what you want to say.
That's right. That's a good idea.
Write your MP. Write Health Canada. Write the media to say, why are you not having this on the front page?
Yeah.
This is a survival.
That's right. That's what got rid of David Dingwall the last time, about 10 years ago. He was thrown out because of the public outcry.
I mean, this has been allowed to happen because the public basically just became apathetic and complacent. And said,
well,
oh,
don't
somebody's
forget, we just heard about this a week ago, so this is like a sudden.
Well, this is the other thing. They gave us 1 week to respond. Well,
yeah.
You haven't even got 1 week to get
That's
the information
right.
out.
Ridiculous.
Now, there was a deadline yesterday, right? How do you know how many companies have responded and what that looks like?
I have no idea. We sent off 500 signatures and some of our customers have written personal letters and emailed them.
Every single person who cares about their health and the health of their family has to get involved at this point. Write your MP. Write the media. Write Health Canada. Write the opposition. Write anybody that you can think of and make a hell of a storm.
The summer
That's
break
a good
is
idea.
On, so we should be able to talk to our MLAs, or rather our MPs, right on the phone. And there is a Common Ground is hosting a public meeting to discuss this issue. That's May 29th. That's a Tuesday evening at Chai Tea House, which is on West Broadway.
Whereabouts on West Broadway?
3243. Where do you know?
Well, give the address so people know
3243 West Broadway, and that's upstairs. You can call Jamie at 733-2215 to
make a reservation.
Reserve seating, okay?
Repeat that because people have to get pens.
Okay, that's Common Ground hosting a public meeting on Tuesday, May 29th at Chai Tea House, 3243 West Broadway.
And where can people get a webpage reference?
How about, do you have something on your webpage, Robert? On Gaia's webpage?
No, I don't think so. I believe Common Ground does.
Common Ground, okay.
And then
yes, lots of links there too, and Canadian Health Food Association links.
I think you can go to some links on Health Action Network Society too, because they are very concerned about this issue. That's just hansdoc.org, hans.org.
Thanks a lot, Robert, for coming online.
All right, thank you, and thank you, Inga. Good work.
Thank you.
We'll keep in touch. Bye.
This is a fight for survival.
Yes, it is. Yes,
and actually, Health Protection...
Incredibly deceitful agency, isn't it?
Well, Health Canada first was a Health Protection branch, mm-hmm. which acted as a health prevention branch, which then became a health prohibition branch and is now a health destruction branch.
I went to their food guide regulation, the forum that they were having on that, and they actually boasted about white bread and the supplements of artificial vitamins, and they thought that that was a great deed that they had done. And see, so these people are completely backwards and have no concept of
The government has no intention of having health care costs go down because they are implementing the agenda of Big Pharma. However, they are determined that they will milk the pockets through directly and indirectly through taxes of every citizen to the maximum degree that they can.
And I think the film festival Animal Voices is going to be touching on some of these things too. Carl, is that right?
Yes,
Factory farming, for instance.
Yes, we do have a wonderful documentary called Frankensteer, and it was actually a CBC. It was aired on CBC very widely, and this documentary reveals how the ordinary cow has been turned into a antibiotic dependent, hormone laced, and potentially
greasy
carrier of toxic bacteria in the name of cheaper food. But that raises the other issue, which of course is I believe coming to the fore here in in Canada, is that there is a movement now to legalize the bovine growth hormone, which makes cows produce gigantic quantities of white liquid called milk. Now, it has all kinds of perilous implications for these hormones when people are consuming this. And the report that I read this morning was implicating it with prostate cancer.
Well, there is a definite connection to diabetes, and I think today on the news they were saying that diabetes is going up exponentially and will actually break the healthcare system.
Huge article in the Straits saying exactly the same thing.
Now, go ahead. I've lost my thought.
Okay, so yes, that is, we are showing a documentary.
You mean milk and diabetes are linked, right?
No, I wanted to draw attention to the fact that Dr. Chopra, who stopped the bovine growth hormone from coming into Canada, was summarily dismissed as an employee of Health Canada. Any scientist in Health Canada that does not toe the line and actually feels that the public should be informed is released, and Dr. Chopra is in court at the present time, and he is being charged with insubordination. In other words, within these agencies, if you don't toe the agency line, if as a scientist you disclose what you know scientifically, then you are insubordinate. Tell me again that we have not become a closet dictatorship. It is just not that obvious, but the political parties have their whips and keep everybody in line, so our representatives can't do what the citizens want. People within agencies have to toe their line, otherwise they're insubordinate to their superiors. On and on and on. Where will we get the truth?
Yeah,
thank you, Inga.
Yes, thank you very much, Inga, for your powerful arguments in favor of keeping our world freer than it is becoming. Now, I want to just mention the film festival. I guess we are getting pretty close to the end, but in 2 weeks' time, the Animal Voices Film Festival will be upon us once again, and that is something that everybody should put on his calendar. What is it? June the 2nd and 3rd. So that Carl is working hard on that now. Do you have any brief statements you'd like to make, Carl, in the last moments?
Yes, I know. We've got some 13 different documentaries, and many of them are we'll be totally revealing. And from what we had last year, was it changed many people's outlook on animals, especially factory farming, and also to learn more about the animals and see that they also to recognize that they also have feelings, that they also can take care of you, and they can also share so many of the emotions which we have.
Well, thank you for that, Carl. Now, I guess we are just about out of time, so I would like to say thank you for listening to Animal Voices and for tuning in to CFRO 102.7 on your FM dial. We will be back next Friday at 12 noon until 1 o'clock, and please listen again. My name is Marge Adams.
Good. Oh, Bulky!
Bulky the donkey, the children's pet. Bulky the donkey, we'll get there yet. Bulky the donkey, that's his name. He's the lazy mule with the crazy name. Well, Bulky the donkey sleeps all day by his favorite tree in his favorite shade. He don't like work and he don't like tools. That's why Bulky's a lazy mule. He goes so slow,
he goes
so slow. He goes so slow,
he goes
so slow. He goes so slow that he goes, whoa. That's how slow he goes. Well, the farmer called old Bulky's name. He said, Bulky, Bulky, there's work today. But Bulky the donkey never came. He was sawing logs on a bed of hay. Bulky the donkey, the children's pet. Bulky the donkey, we'll get there yet. Bulky the donkey, that's his name. He's the lazy mule with the crazy name. He goes so slow,
he goes
so slow. He goes so slow,
he goes
so slow. He goes so slow that he goes, whoa. That's how slow he goes. You have to pull him by the nose. Did you ever see a mule so slow? He goes, hee-haw, hee-haw, hee-haw. He's the laziest donkey of them all. Bulky the donkey, the children's pet. Bulky the donkey, we'll get there yet. Bulky the donkey, that's his name. He's the lazy mule with the crazy name. He goes so slow,
he goes
so slow. He goes so slow,
he goes
so slow. He goes so slow that he goes, whoa. That's how slow he goes. That's how slow he goes. That's how slow he goes.
Now where is that mule? Bulky! Oh, Bulky! He's a lazy mule with a crazy name.